Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. You're listening to newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with Ed Stetzer.
You said it like the beginning. I haven't interrupted you in a long time, but I like, you're listening. You had that kind of radio. You're listening to the newchurches.com podcast.
I know. It started slurring. I was like, what am I doing? I usually
enunciate. Oh, good. I like it. Hello, I'm Daniel Lim. You're listening to the New Churches podcast. I like it.
It's because we're on a roll. We're on a roll.
There you go. We are. Like, this is the first three-part series we've ever done, but we're talking about the missiological implications of an aversion. You can put this as the title of the episode: the missiological implications of the potential aversion that people would have to large gatherings during the COVID-19 coronavirus crisis. That's a great title. If ever there was a title, that is the title.
Okay, I think you showed your true academic colors, because
sorry, there it is.
That's like the long thesis title. Isn't that like a prerequisite? Every thesis has to be like, you know, a run-on sentence.
My PhD was like, I don't even know, 30-word title. My DMin was longer in the number of words than the PhD was. But you know, you have to bring it on, and that's part of the fun. But I do think the fact that we're drilling in on this is kind of a statement of the moment that we're in. Can something fundamentally change the way people think, and thus the way they behave, in such a way that would have significant missiological implications? And the answer is obviously. So Think back historically to China. You think about China before the revolution, right? So you've got significant missionary presence in China. Matter of fact, it may be one of the best engaged places. And then you have the Chinese Revolution, and the communists come to power. And when the communists come to power, of course, what they do is they actually kick out all the missionaries. So the missionaries go to the Chinese diaspora. So you get missionaries going to Taiwan. You get missionaries going to, you know, the Chinese-born community in Malaysia and more. And then in what happens in China itself is that China adopts a policy called the three self policy. So the three self language, named from missiologists like Henry Venn and Rufus Anderson. And then it's called the three self patriotic movement. Now the Chinese government wasn't trying to create a missiological movement, but basically there were these principles. The three self formula was that churches had to be self-governing, self-supporting, and self-propagating. And so the Chinese government took that and said, well, we just don't want churches influenced by foreigners. So the Catholic Church in China then wouldn't be appointing their own bishops. It would be a Chinese Catholic Church, not a Roman Catholic Church, or, you know, the Anglicans in England or the Baptists in Philadelphia. And here's the irony, right? So they kicked out all the missionaries. They made illegal churches that didn't get recognized through the government, the three self-patriotic movement. And in doing so, they forced the movement underground, the house church movement underground. And in doing so, actually created the fertile soil for an explosion of house churches, to the point where, you know, I mean, it depends on who you ask, but we could have 100 million practicing evangelical Chinese Christians. And the places where the missionaries went to reach the Chinese diaspora, far less impact. So what happened is the revolution changed the soil. So the kind of church that would grow in that soil changed, but it became much more rapidly reproducing. And so it's almost a contrast and this is one of the sad stories of missions, when they kick out the missionaries, but there was enough there that could take on its own and begin to multiply. But by kicking out the missionaries and changing the rules, you created a new soil through which a rapidly growing church could be planted and then reproduced. So the question is, what happened in China is force. Remember, I used the last episode, downward pressure on church size. In that case, it was political. So if there's a downward pressure on gathering size 3, 4, 5, 6 months from now, or 5 years from now, I think churches are going to adapt, because the the size of a church, the kind of building it meets in, those are not biblically mandated things. Mm-hmm. What there are marks of a biblical church, we'll link again that into the episode in the show notes. But at the same time, churches are remarkably adaptable as culture changes. And if we move into a time when the big meeting is seen as a threat, we're going to actually see churches multiply rather than expand. They're going to multiply groups rather than expand into one large place.
Yeah. So that's the question. Is COVID-19 fundamentally changing the soil, not only for the church in the West, but globally? So when we think about it from that perspective, I mean, this is episode 525. So if you haven't listened to part one and two, which are episode 521 and 523, and you're like, what is Ed talking about? Go back to 521.
You might say that anyway, but yeah.
And then 523, and then this is going to make sense because we're just continuing the conversation. So, okay, so let me pick up from there, Ed. When we ended our last episode, we really brought it back to that idea of, okay, what does church planting right now during COVID look like? I mean, that was our initial question in 521. I'm planning this month. What advice do you have for me? And what church plants have, the advantage that they have, is something that every existing church has experienced over the last few months: the opportunity to hit reset. Churches are notorious for starting things and not stopping them, or for adding and not subtracting. And COVID has given the opportunity for churches all over to cut programs, to stop things. Now, the worst thing that you can do is be like, well, we're starting up, we're reopening, so we better restart everything else. No, that is the worst thing that you can do, because we are not going back to what was. We are creating this new normal. Now, the advantage, so that's what every existing church has had to deal with, but the advantage of starting a new church right now, planting a new church right now, is that it is legitimately fresh DNA. Fresh DNA that you can say missiologically, and that's the thing, right? I mean, it's hard to find, even planting missional churches, there's going to be great insights and principles there, but that in and of itself is not going to be enough for you to have the insight you need to plant a church. You need to be soaking your plant in prayer. You need to be praying together with your launch team. You need to be prayer walking and seeking God's face to know, hey, what does it look like for us to incarnate the presence of Jesus in our neighborhood during COVID, during this season, right now, in light of all the restrictions, and not only in my province or state or country, but in my county, in my city, in my jurisdiction, and all that. So that is the piece where right now is an incredible time, because people are spiritually searching and hungry.
Yeah. And my caution would be to not make a theological case if you don't believe this. Now, there are people that I know and love who theologically believe that the church should multiply rather than expand, that you can't function as a New Testament church with more than 50, 60 people, that community is not engageable at that level. And therefore, they are always going to see, and again, this is probably not going to be a group that most of our people are listening to, because, you know, I mean, gosh, if every other episode is about multi-site, that would, you know, put people over the edge who, yeah, who hold that theological position. But it does exist. What I would say to you is, I wouldn't make a theological case, but I would make a missiological case, and I would consider the possibility that this missiological case, that right now being multiplying rather than expanding, being nimble rather than tied to a building, that these are a missiological opportunity. What you might want to do is be careful about saying one of two things. I wouldn't say, and we're going to do it this way forever, because the reality is, you know, there's actually a book, Home Cells and House Churches, from many, many years ago. I think it was the 80s. And it was Kirk Hathaway and Francis DuBose, I think. And in that article, they pointed out that most of the time these movements, so this is like they're exploring movements in the 70s and writing about them in the 80s. And what they say is that most of the time they move back. It's actually from 1987. I pulled it up, and that was the Wright authors. And also Stuart Wright was the third author. But what they pointed out is that these movements that were these incredible house church movements that spanned a region after the pioneering founder's death often reverted to more traditional forms of church. What I would say is this: if you don't think theologically that this has to be this way, I would make a missiological case that the moment we're in shapes, in some ways, the mission we're on, and we want to seize that by multiplying rather than expanding, by being intentional about the kind of house church community that we can be. And it very well may be, by the time we get to mid-2021, that there's not a vaccine. I hope everyone is aware that not all viruses get vaccines. HIV, AIDS. Mm. We don't have a vaccine for AIDS, for HIV, the virus. We not all vaccines work. The efficacy is low and more. So if you're in mid-summer 2021, you might say, you know what? This is actually going to be our missiological strategy long-term. And you might also find that, boy, a whole lot of people are open to gather in these kind of community settings than they were before the pandemic. So I'm just asking the Lord in the midst of this, is this a missiological opportunity? Donald McGovern, who, again, people focus on a few things he said they didn't like, but Donald McGovern often pointed out that change, like mass movements, people migration, it makes people open to the gospel and new expressions of church in a fresh new way. He wouldn't use the language like that because that's modern language. But I think that's the question we're asking, is there a fresh openness to the gospel? I think there is. Is there an openness to new ways to do church, even for people who are not engaged in church? I don't know I'd say that for sure yet, but I'd start walking down that path and see over the next few months.
Yeah, I love that. Now, just to speak personally, as I lead here in Edmonton, and we are a three-campus multi-site church, and as I think about multiplication, one of the things that's on my heart is, hey, how do we reach our city? How do we reach our city? And methodologically, we are using multi-site, and outside of Edmonton, it's, yeah, let's fund and train up church planters and send them out. But when I think of Edmonton in particular, I'll just give you an example of how my thinking is shifting. When I think about where our campuses are and what it looks like to reach the city, I am thinking smaller. And when we were supposed to launch a campus downtown this fall, right? So at the time of this recording, this month, we would have had our launch gatherings happening over the summer, and we were going to launch a campus this fall downtown. And we put a pause on that. Now, I'm grateful and glad we put a pause on that because my thinking has actually changed. Instead of saying, hey, we're going to plant a campus downtown, and Edmonton's downtown is unique because there's a hub. If there are any hockey fans listening in, the Stanley Cup Finals happened. Edmonton was a bubble ice city, a city for the NHL on the West Coast, and the Stanley Cup Finals happened here as well. And it's there's a growing, booming Edmonton central downtown district. But here's the thing. There are three university colleges right in downtown. And what's unique about this is, three of them major are right there within walking distance, or, you know, a quick bike ride to the Central Ice District in Edmonton. So how my thinking has shifted is like, hey, what if instead of planting one campus downtown, we actually plant a campus at every university and campus? And also, so really thinking not regionally, but more neighborhood specific, to think and to actually say, hey, let's plant small, let's plant nimble, let's plant in that manner.
Yeah. And I think that, again, let's do that in this manner is not, we have a theological conviction that this is the way it must be done. And I'm not, again, there are people who do, just like Anglicans, you know, have a theological conviction about the Eucharist and liturgy, right? So there are theological reasons, but you're laying out a missiological reason. I think you may be right. And I think you may find in 2021, you've had a much bigger impact by planting more rooted, connected communities. And I think one of the things that people find, as a college, we're meeting, and we had a camp this summer that actually met. You know, we followed CDC guidelines, and actually Dr. Fauci recommended camps meet. But one of the things we did is we isolated people, like at the camp. There was, everyone stays in a cabin. You're in a cabin, you're sleeping overnight. You can't actually completely isolate, and people don't sleep in masks. But what the best practice is in these kind of situations is to pod people off. Mm. So in other words, there are eight people in this cabin. Those eight people, when they're together, they don't have to wear a mask.
Yeah.
When they get in a bigger group, they all got a mask and social distance. And so what happens is it sort of isolates people from the larger whole where a disease, a vector transmission can just take off. I think you may see people in certain neighborhoods, in certain communities say, I'm kind of sticking closer to home to people that I know. Yeah. And it's sort of a maybe unintentional in their mind, but it's less likely. That's why travel's down so much. Meeting strangers is down so much. If that's the case, if we're staying closer to home and with our neighbors, then home-based, neighborhood-focused ministry is going to make even more sense in the years to come. That's one of the reasons we had Dave Runyon on. I hate to mention my other podcast. We don't do interviews like that on New Churches podcasts. It's just Todd and me and Daniel. But we interviewed Dave Runyon about his book, Neighboring, his co-author book, Neighboring, because we just think that as people stay closer to home and engage their neighbors, that this is going to be a neighboring moment. And what an opportunity for missional planting, for missional opportunities through planting and planting sites that engage neighbors and communities.
Yeah, love it. Love it. Well, I hope you enjoyed this three-part series. It's a little bit of a twist on New Churches because I know people love the fact that it's a quick drive or a quick bike ride or whatever because it's 15 minutes. But I know the thing that I'd been wrestling with, especially as I think about other podcasts that I've been a part of or hosted, is the longer ones, you can go deeper. So we essentially did a 45-minute episode by doing these three together. So if you have a topic that regarding church planting or multiplication or multi-site or any of that, that you would like to us to do a deep dive in, please send that in. Please send that in to newchurches.com. On the sidebar, if you're on your computer, you'll see a button that says send a voicemail. If you're on your mobile device, just go to speakpipe.com/newchurches. You can send that in and we will do a deep dive on that in an upcoming episode or series of episodes. Thanks again for listening in, and we'll catch you next time.